Hello and a very warm welcome to the latest edition of Work Life Stories. I'm Anna Richards and I'm delighted to be joined today by Elaine Halligan. Elaine is one of our wonderful experts from our panel and is frequently featured in our program of live talks and workshops and on our videos, which are all available on demand as well. So she probably needs very little introduction to many of you, but very briefly, she's the director of the parent practice. She helps parents and teachers to raise competent and confident children through parenting classes, private coaching, and keynote speaking. She often talks to us about her neurodiverse son, who has inspired much of her work and is indeed the focus of her book, My Child is Different, which is an Amazon bestseller in its category. Elaine has recently learnt that she herself is also neurodiverse, and she's kind enough to talk to me about this today. Elaine, I'm really grateful for you talking to me about this very personal topic. It must feel very strange. I know that neurodiversity is so central to much of your professional life, but it's just a quick pivot and we're suddenly talking about you very personally. So I'm really, really grateful to you for doing that with me today. Let's start at the beginning, really. How did this come about? How did you discover that, in fact, a lot of this neurodiversity discussion actually applies to yourself as well?
So thank you for that wonderful introduction. And before I tell you the story, I've just got to confess that this is a really big moment. You know, you have those big moments in your life, and this is one of them, because although many of my friends and family know, and the odd client knows who also has a neurodiverse child, this is the first time I've really spoken about it publicly, and I'm very ready to do it. And the story is this. It happened 3 years ago, around about December 2019. My son, who was 26 at the time, came to me and said, "Mom, I'm really struggling in my business." He's a typical entrepreneur and he was struggling to organize himself. And he said, "You remember that diagnosis I had of ADHD? Do you mind if we get it checked again?" So I thought, this is curious because, you know, obviously he's highlighted and we've always known the weaknesses he has, which is definitely organization and hyperfocus. But for him to come and say, "Do you mind if we kind of do a kind of fresh test?" I thought that was quite mature and quite responsible. So off I go to my colleagues, and I've got a wonderful educational psychologist that I highly recommend called Josephine Storick. And I was having coffee with her. It was December 2019. I can remember it vividly, Anna. And at this coffee, I said, "Do you mind testing Sam again and just seeing what his cognitive profile is?" Because he, you know, he's a little skeptical about this ADHD diagnosis. Now, you may think it's strange to go to an educational psychologist, but actually it's quite a nice route in to kind of get an overview of cognitively where he was at. Mm. I announced it to Josephine and she immediately said, "Well, yeah, sure, I'll test him. But I can tell you now he's got ADHD because you have."
Gosh.
And I literally dropped my coffee in the restaurant. And I felt as if just a 100 ton lorry had just hit me in the face. And I kind of was quite defensive. Mm. I said, "Josephine, what are you talking about? I haven't got ADHD. And she said, "Oh, you haven't?" "Oh," she said, "sorry, I thought you'd been diagnosed with it." I said, "No, I've never been diagnosed with ADHD." And that was where it all started.
Wow.
So she said, "Well, look, come in. Let's do a cognitive assessment, first of all, just to see how the brain is working. And if I see signs of ADHD, I can then signpost you to a psychiatrist." So I thought that was quite a nice, gentle route in terms of exploring and discovering. I did the educational psychology assessment, which I've never had done in my life, aged 55. And lo and behold, I come out as something called twice exceptional. And so the family think this is terribly amusing. I'm twice exceptional. What on earth does that mean? Well, it means I'm gifted. So I was kind of on the 99th percentile for maths and some other areas. And yet she noticed that I also had a neurodiverse condition, ADHD. And that is where the term twice exceptional comes from. So round about May 2020, right in the middle of lockdown, there you get it. I'm diagnosed with ADHD. Sam has his ADHD diagnosis reconfirmed. And life suddenly takes on a whole different look and feel.
Wow. Wow. I can't imagine how extraordinary that must have been to go through that. Did your profile look quite similar to your son's in the testing and the profiling?
That's a really interesting question. No, mm-hmm. Because he has severe dyslexia.
Okay.
So cognitively, his profile was very different.
Yeah.
And interestingly, when I asked my family, you know, and friends about it, it was really interesting, their reactions. And my business partner at the time, Melissa, said, well, I've known for ages that you've had ADHD. And I was thinking, well, thanks for telling me.
Yeah.
And then told my husband, and he went, oh, hallelujah. He says, we've got the answer to why you leave cupboard doors open, why you forget keys, why you forget your passport going to the airport. And then I told my dad, and my dad went, I always thought you were a bit quirky. So it was like everyone around me kind of knew I was slightly different, but I didn't know it, or I wasn't in tune enough to kind of recognize some of the character traits I've got and some of the ADHD traits actually that were a huge benefit.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I've been lucky in my life turning those traits that I have into a real asset. So for example, it's interesting if I trace back my career.
Yeah.
And this, I hope, will be quite fascinating for some listeners. But I definitely masked at school. And looking back, and when I was diagnosed with a psychiatrist, they had to interview my mother and father in their 80s. And I'll never forget doing my GCSEs, and I was a hair puller. So I suffered from anxiety, but no one recognized it at the time. But I remembered I would sit there studying, twiddling my hair and pulling it. And if you speak to psychiatrists today, you know, anxiety and depression are kind of one of the outcomes when ADHD is not diagnosed early enough or treated. So actually looking back, I was showing all the signs of suffering from severe anxiety. And psychiatrists will say the hair pulling, the chewing of nails, the chewing of skin, even picking eyelashes, that's all a sign of anxiety. But anxiety comes from somewhere. And for me, it must have been my ADHD. But, you know, the good news is I kind of muddled through, I guess, my young adult years, definitely in the wrong job, Anna. Oh my God, I was in the wrong job.
What job were you doing back then?
So I went to Edinburgh University and did a law degree. And although quite liked it, I had a real thirst to travel.
Yeah.
And it was only in my third year or final year, I kind of realized that I had a Scottish law degree. And it was in the 80s, and you couldn't even practice down south without a conversion. So I was kind of desperately Googling, where can I practice Scottish law? And up pops Vanuatu, the South Pacific island.
Oh, wow.
And here's me going, oh, I'd quite like to go to Vanuatu, actually. And that was all the signs of the kind of thirst for adventure, the kind of novelty, the kind of dopamine fix I wanted. And throughout university, I was scuba diving, I was gliding, I did all the dangerous activities. I went to America every summer on a BUNA camp and got very involved with an organization called BUNA Camp, which doesn't exist anymore. I think it was like Camp America. And then when I finished university, I suddenly realized I'd made a big mistake. Oh my God, I've got a law degree and I want to travel. We can't travel with a Scottish law degree. So I announced to my parents, I'm going to go off to South Africa. And it was in the year 1988. I'm showing my age, aren't I? And I don't know whether any of your listeners will remember this, but, you know, we were marching to free Nelson Mandela. South Africa was boycotted at the time. Barclays was boycotted. We weren't buying South African produce. And up I pop and say, I'm off to South Africa, age 21. So if you think back, there were extraordinary things I did that actually, had we been more aware, were a clear sign that I was a thrill seeker looking for that dopamine fix all the time.
Yeah.
Came back from South Africa, didn't want to do law. My father said, I know what you should do. I think you should be a chartered accountant. And because I was so willing and so keen to please my father, I was definitely a people pleaser, which is another trait that, you know, a lot of girls especially can have. I kind of went, okay, I'll do an accountancy degree. So the bottom line is I spent 8 years in careers that actually were so ill-suited for me. And when I look back at school, I just wanted to do psychology. And I was told, nope, you're too bright. You need to go down the professional route. And I didn't have the courage or the confidence, I think, or the self-esteem to kind of think for myself. And so I ended up for 10 years in the wrong career.
And do you Firstly, do you think back then there was just so much less awareness of neurodiversity and ADHD in particular? And I suppose second part to the question, I'm sure you have thought back, what if you had been diagnosed back then? How might life have been quite different?
So I'll answer the first question first, which is just wish we had a lack of awareness. And yep. There's still a lack of awareness now, but it's getting better.
Yeah.
So no, we didn't understand Asperger's, autistic spectrum, but I can guarantee all of us at school will have had children in our class who are neurodiverse, who are quirky. We may have labelled them as odd or weird, and I'm sorry to use those terms, but that is the term children will use. And you know, I think I was labelled as a bit odd, and I think friendships were often a problem for me because people didn't know what they were going to get from me. So the signs are always there, and, you know, we understand that the awareness wasn't there. In terms of your second question, you know, how would life have been different? Okay, I think I probably would have chosen a different career had I understood neurologically and cognitively what my profile was. Mm. You can't say for 1 minute that 10 years of my life was wasted, because it's all experiences, and it's all about what you do with those experiences. And I think it's a bit of a high-stake poker game, actually, if you've got ADHD. So I'll be really honest with you. I think you can go one way or you can go the other. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, if you don't use your traits as an asset and see them as an asset, it is very easy to go down the route of addiction, of failed relationships, in and out of work. And often you'll see ADHD adults are suffering from anxiety and depression, but there will always be a root cause to that that may never have been investigated. And I see that now in my coaching business at the Parent Practice, where I coach parents of teenagers and young adults who've just gone off to university. Mm. And perhaps they've spent, you know, their whole life in education on a roadmap to get them into X university. And they get there and they fail. And they fail because the price has just been too high. Yeah. They've held it together for so long, but there have always been signs there of neurodiversity. And if it's not diagnosed early or addressed or understood, it will eventually lead to mental health issues. So I think in terms of the high stake poker game, I was lucky. I think I just used a lot of my ADHD traits positively. Not that I understood them at the time. And it was just pure luck when I had my firstborn at 29 that I then, by having Sam, who's neurodiverse, ended up training as a parenting coach. So yeah. No, I have no regrets whatsoever. But I would just say that I encourage everyone to help their children think and act for themselves. Don't have a roadmap planned for them. Your children are not a project development exercise.
Yeah.
Let them be who they are. Whether we're talking about gender, whether we're talking about autistic spectrum, whether we're talking about a neurological condition, I would say embrace the child you have and not the child you want them to be, and let them make their own decisions. And for me, I just wasn't confident enough to make my own decisions.
Yeah. Amazing advice as always. Thank you. And Elaine, you talked about, you know, since your diagnosis as being such a positive for you and quite a lot of clarity, I think you mentioned there. Tell me more about what happened next. Did you feel differently? What happened for you? How were you able to move forward from that moment?
So if you cast your mind back, and we can't forget this, to March, I think it was March the 17th, 2020, when COVID struck. I then got diagnosed 2 months later. Between March and my diagnosis, we were peddling like crazy to save the business falling off a cliff.
Yeah.
Because the Parent Practice is involved in parent coaching and teaching. And at that time, we were running around London delivering live parenting classes to groups. COVID struck, literally, we fell off a cliff. And I saw this as a huge opportunity because for years, I'd been wanting to take our products online. But I was met with resistance from my team, but also from clients. You know, they didn't want it. They wanted the live stuff. So we put a train the trainers course on using Zoom about 5 years ago. So I was kind of all over Zoom. So I quickly trained up the team. We pivoted to Zoom. They were kind of reluctant to do it, obviously, because it was a big change. And I just saw this was the future of the business. No longer did we need to be running around delivering live classes. We could actually deliver more to a greater audience doing an online provision. And then suddenly I got this just huge clarity that the business model we were running was actually not economic. It wasn't viable. And so I think post-diagnosis, that clarity, it was like putting on a different set of lenses. Yeah. And I knew immediately what I had to do. And it was a very distressing time. I think distressing time for a lot of families and a lot of businesses, you know, how they could just save themselves. And for me, it was, gosh, I think I want to now go alone. I think it'll be simpler. I think it'll be easier rather than managing a team. And, you know, I'd built up a reputation inadvertently. I've kind of been a neurodiverse specialist. So clients were pouring in. And so that was when I kind of had these really challenging conversations with my former business partner. And thank goodness we had communication skills. And within a year, the business had changed and pivoted. And it was just me. No longer did we have an office with office managers.
Wow.
But now I've streamlined everything. And I'm reaching more clients than we've done in kind of 10 years.
Gosh, fantastic. Well, congratulations. What an amazing few years. COVID certainly a defining moment, and obviously your own situation as well. Brilliant. And Elaine, I'm wondering if people listening to our conversation might have somebody in their mind that they wonder if they could have a similar situation to you, something possibly neurodiverse, something's not quite right, either themselves or a friend, a partner. What would you say to them? What advice might you give them?
Well, the first thing to say is you can't give advice to someone who doesn't ask for it.
Yeah.
It's just not possible. People will be very defensive. So the first thing to do is use one of the skills I teach at the parent practice, which is to emotion coach, which is just to validate how someone may be feeling.
Yeah.
And all behavior has a cause, and most behavior is underpinned by some really deep feelings and emotions. So the first thing we need to do is just listen to our friends and family, you know, validate how they're feeling, whether they're feeling unsuccessful, whether they're feeling lonely, whether they're feeling fearful, or whatever the emotion is. Once you've validated emotions, I would then always invite friends and family to be curious. Just invite them to be curious. All behavior has a cause. Have you ever wondered why X, Y, and Z happen? And, you know, the ADHD adults who take that other path, down addiction, whether it's with exercise. So you'll see people exercising frenetically. That's one way organically of managing that subtype of hyperactivity. Whether you see them exercising crazily or struggling to hold down a job or struggling with relationships, just invite them to be curious. And it's a really difficult conversation. But don't give advice unless it's asked for.
Very good. Very good advice. Thank you. So, Elaine, for people that might be going through a similar situation to yourself, what happens really after a diagnosis? I know you talked about your own experience of that, but what are the practical steps that might happen?
I think I need to go back a step, actually, Anna, because if you get to the diagnosis step, you're kind of almost at acceptance, because you've gone for an assessment.
Yeah.
So to go back a step, I meet with lots of parents whose children clearly have some neurological condition, and so I signpost them to a psychiatrist. But the first response I'll get is, I'm not labeling my child. I do not want to label my child. And I absolutely understand that. I think if labeling leads us to, let's say, pathologizing behavior, I don't think that's right. But if having an assessment and a diagnosis and, a label allows you to understand cognitively what's going on for your child and why they behave as you do, wow, that knowledge is super powerful. So this is not necessarily about labeling it. It's about seeing that this is not a deficit disorder model. I mean, the whole term in itself, attention deficit, hyperactivity deficit disorder, is a shocking term.
Yeah.
Deficit implies weakness. Disorder is really demotivating. So it's not about labeling. Okay, there is a term for it, ADHD. I wish it was termed differently. It's not a deficit and it's not a disorder. And I think once you have that knowledge, then you have the power. And that is the light bulb moment. So I just wanted to address that first, because when you get to the diagnosis, I think all parents listening to this need to be really clear that the only thing the psychiatrist will offer you is medication.
Okay.
And I would say in 80% of time, medication works beautifully. And my experience is most parents I meet, I haven't met one who says, yes, please medicate my child. But I've met lots of parents who say, gosh, I actually wish I'd done it sooner to enable my child to access education.
Interesting.
So you have to be very clear about what your values are. You absolutely can treat ADHD organically. And I guess to give you three headlines of what to think about, it's all about sleep hygiene. It's all about exercise. It's about nutrition. It's about managing screens. That's a really simple overview. But, you know, the medication works beautifully. If you decide not to go down that route, you still need to look at the sleep, exercise, nutrition. And the key thing is that ADHDers thrive on structure and routine.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about family life, how do you get structure and routine in family life? It's all about having clear rules.
Yeah.
And most parents I coach think they have rules, but actually their rules aren't working. And so I help them understand how to have rules that are really effective and that work. So there are a number of things that parents can do post-diagnosis. I would say definitely explore the organic route, definitely explore medication, definitely get parent coaching. Without parent coaching, you will be at a loss of what to do and what to say when your children, you know, are impulsive or intense emotionally or super sensitive. Really important, you know. And the final thing for the teenagers, later teenagers and young adults, really important to get them some sort of coaching to help them with one of the key issues ADHDers have, which is an organization. Mm-hmm. So it's all about time management. They often have time blindness. Yeah. So a little bit of coaching there, but you can't force a teenager to get coaching. It's got to come from them. The sad thing is, I've coached many families where they actually haven't disclosed the diagnosis to their children.
Really?
And I know that may surprise you, but it's probably from a bit of shame, maybe a bit of embarrassment, maybe a bit of fear about what the school will say and how the school will react. So, you know, if you've got a 16-year-old who's struggling at school with friendships, struggling on all sorts of levels, and the parents know there's ADHD there and the child's never been told, I think that's criminal.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it talks about maybe the shame and embarrassment that still exists in society about being neurodiverse. I feel no shame. I feel no embarrassment. I just wondered whether it was right professionally for me to disclose this, but actually it is right because this is my zone of genius. I've lived with this for, you know, 57 years. This is my zone of genius now. And clearly the skills and strategies I coach parents with, they work. They work beautifully. So there is no embarrassment, but I understand society still doesn't embrace difference.
Yeah.
Society still doesn't do difference. And if anyone's read my book, My Child's Different, you'll know the chapter I wrote about being on a train and being told by a stranger that my child needed a darned good smack. And that is just highlighting, you know, publicly. Yeah, I've been embarrassed in public with my son, but the public are unaware. They're uneducated. And it's our job to ensure that we can talk about neurodiversity without any shame, without any embarrassment. And that only comes from getting rid of the deficit disorder model, which is demotivating, and seeing it as a, well, a bit crass term, superpower. But Dr. Ned Halliwell, he's the wonderful ADHD expert. And actually, he's the only person I've followed because there's so much noise out there, so much noise. But Ned Halliwell says, look, the ADHD brain, it's a Ferrari brain, but it's got the wrong engine oil. Or it's a Ferrari brain with bicycle brakes. So we've got to get those brakes working.
Yeah.
And he also says the ADHD brain's like the Niagara Falls. Wow, think of the Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
Hugely powerful force of water. But it doesn't do anything. It just flows down.
Yeah.
If you put a hydroelectric plant on top of the Niagara Falls, Well, you could light up half of Canada.
Yeah.
And that is the way parents need to see this neurological profile.
Yeah. Very powerful description. We're going to look him up as well. Thank you. I'm interested. You obviously talked about not disclosing to children. Presumably this comes up with quite young children. How would you approach talking to, you know, a sort of 6, 7, 8-year-old who you might suspect had ADHD or maybe diagnosed? How would you approach that at that much younger age?
So I think if you suspect but haven't got a clear diagnosis, you need to be really careful here that you don't jump to any assumptions and conclusions.
Yeah.
But what you could say, if you notice that there are issues with distractibility, lack of focus in class, impulsivity, you could say, I noticed that, you know, focusing in class is getting really hard for you. You tell me often that the teacher tells you to concentrate more, which is the worst thing you can say.
Yeah.
Or maybe the child's labeled as a bit lazy or unmotivated. And you can say to them, I don't think you're any of these things. I think that actually, rather than you being a problem in classroom, maybe you're having a little problem to focus. And I wonder if you want to investigate more and see what's going on. See how your brain works, because there's something about your brain that's very different from other people. You can do X, Y, and Z. You're not fearful of jumping off and go ape, you know, where other children are frightened. I wonder if you're curious about how your brain works.
Yeah.
If they say yes, then I always refer to an ed psych first, like Josephine Storick, someone really good who's not qualified to diagnose ADHD, but can signpost. And that is a really beautiful first step, because cognitively, you then get an overview of where your child's strengths and weaknesses are. Then if the educational psychologist say, and I see signs of ADHD, then we can go to the next step, which is a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think going straight to the psychiatrist is quite a scary step.
Yeah.
So the educational psychology route is a nice soft startup, but it gives you fantastic empirical evidence that I think all children should get, because it can really direct them in their choices of subjects, especially at A-level, and ensure they don't go down the route that I went down, which was a law degree and a chartered accountancy qualification. I was not suited for that.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Sounds like a really good step. It's a bit like doing those, well, I remember doing things in sort of previous jobs about just learning your own, I mean, I guess it's your psychological profile, but a very simplified version that you do in team building days and things. So it's incredibly useful.
It's incredibly useful. And if I'm coaching parents of teens who are a bit stuck as to what university degree to do, I'll always refer them to my colleague at Colour Me Profiling, who does a really quick psychometric test based on colours, strengths and weaknesses. And it's just the most fabulous £100 or whatever. I think actually it's only £20 for the report.
Yeah.
Most fabulous thing you'll ever do.
Yeah, fantastic. Brilliant. Well, I took you off down a bit of a tangent there, but that was really, really helpful. Elaine, let's go back to the diagnosis and treatment. What might happen next if an adult or a child, I don't know if you want to focus on one in particular, were to be diagnosed? What sort of treatment might somebody expect?
So a psychiatrist will be recommending medication. Mm-hmm. My experience is it's very much suck it and see.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different medication out there and it can take some time to get the right dosage. Hopefully the psychiatrist will be, you know, informing them in other ways to treat ADHD. I think I mentioned the sleep, exercise and nutrition.
Yeah.
And then finally, it's to get that parent coaching, which is absolutely essential. So you know why your child behaves as they do, you understand it, you have more empathy, but most importantly, you have that toolkit to know what to do and say in the moment to ensure that, you know, your children are going to be competent, confident, cooperative, you know, young adults.
Mm.
And then finally, the young person often needs coaching because they need lots of help in how to organize themselves, how to structure themselves, and how to get rid of that time blindness. So there's lots of tools and techniques. So I would say it's a bit of a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
I'm a big part of the jigsaw puzzle, but I'm not the only part. The psychiatrist is a big part. And then we bring in coaches to kind of assist in the day-to-day living.
Yeah. And if it was an adult, would you suggest that they talk to their employer about this revelation, I guess?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Of course, you have to. So ADHD does come with some traits that may have caused issues at work, in terms of time management or even terms of relationships. So really important that your employer understands this and knows about it. I think the level of support you get in companies varies hugely.
Yeah.
I think the culture varies hugely. So although I've just given my recommendation, I think it can be very nuanced based on the culture of an organization and what's happening. Interestingly, something like dyslexia is registered as a disability in the Disability Act, but something like ADHD is not. So if you disclose to your employer that you've got dyslexia, they absolutely have to make provision for you because that is a disability. Mm-hmm. ADHD is not. So quite an interesting differentiation there.
Yeah, very interesting. Brilliant, Elaine. Well, I've loved hearing about all of this. It's a huge topic, and we've talked about it from the adult and a child point of view, so I'm really grateful for that. What are the final thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Gosh, if you do have a child diagnosed with ADHD, my first response is huge congratulations, because it means that you've been self-aware enough and brave enough to get an early diagnosis, and early diagnosis is key. So it's all about helping your child celebrate who they are and helping them turn it into an asset and helping them embrace their neurological profile. I think the second takeaway for parents is please accept the child you've got, not the child you may want them to be. Mm-hmm. Work with them. Everyone has their zone of genius, and it's your job to help your child unlock that zone of genius. They may not be your typical learner. They may be atypical learners. And if you take my son, who was expelled from 3 schools by the age of 7, we're talking really atypical learning. You know, he found his zone of genius. He's an entrepreneur. He runs his own businesses. There is always something out there, but work with the child you have. And finally, be curious. If your child's struggling, whether it be in the classroom or at home, it may be that they're not being a problem, but they may be having a problem.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Elaine, for your wise words, as always. I really appreciate it, and especially you talking to us about your own personal story. I'm very grateful for that. Thank you.
Pleasure. Bye for now.
Thank you to all our listeners for joining us today as well. I hope you found it as enlightening, as interesting as I have. If you'd like to find out more about Elaine and the expertise that she offers, please visit theparentpractice.com. On there, you can find lots of fantastic resources and help around neurodiversity and ADHD in particular. Within her blogs, there's an article called "Is an ADHD Diagnosis Helpful or a Hindrance?" which might be useful. And on both her website and published on worklifecentral.com is also an article written by Elaine called "Could Your Child Be Neurodiverse?" which is another great resource full of lots of advice and tips for you on there. If you'd like to find out more what's coming up in the Work Life Central program, particularly around inclusion related topics or families, please do visit worklifecentral.com and stay tuned for more coming soon from Work Life Stories. Thank you and goodbye.